This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. This is a show about opening up the often mysterious world of how doctors think. The goal? To empower the listener to gain access to the best healthcare possible.
And welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. I am Dr. Paul Anderson, coming to you from Seattle, Washington, in our clinic at Anderson Medical Specialty Associates. Today we have a topic that relates to one of the most common complaints doctors hear from patients, which is fatigue. And we've had a couple of other shows. We've talked about fatigue fairly generally. And then we had one where we talked about the relationship of thyroid hormone function to fatigue, so a little bit more specific. And that one actually crosses over with today a little bit. But today what we want to do is talk about something that everybody knows pretty much can make you not feel well if it's not working right. But very few patients, in my experience, really understand the depth to which this can affect your health, and especially the presenting complaint of being fatigued. So, as we talked about before on a number of occasions, fatigue as a complaint it's not a disease, it's a way you feel, a way your body operates. And so then the doctor has to sort of decide, is this fatigue because of something really bad, something like, you know, cancer or some other big problem, or is this fatigue because you're missing something, like you don't have enough thyroid hormone, or maybe you're anemic or some other thing? And so relating fatigue to our topic today is the introduction to the topic. But the topic today is iron and the way it affects your health. And a lot of people sort of glaze over when they hear about iron, because everybody has heard about, okay, you need enough iron so you don't get anemia. And that's the end of the story for them. In reality, it's just a very tiny piece of the story. And the reason that I wanted to bring this topic up is some of our most profoundly ill patients who had seen lots and lots of doctors and had a lot of treatments done that just were not working, you know, quite frankly, and were getting sicker and had been sick for many, many years. At the very root of their slide into illness was this problem of a negative cycle of less and less iron in the body, which leads to less absorption of iron from the diet, which leads to less iron in the body. And then the body just starts not working very well at all. So we're going to talk about those people and kind of how that works. But before our first break, I wanted to go through just some basics and some maybe things you may or may not have thought about with respect to iron. First off, you know, we all think about iron and its role in nutrition. And a lot of the time, you know, depending on how old you are and what TV shows and commercials you grew up with, you might recall the old Geritol commercials, you know, where you take Geritol every day and it had iron and all this other stuff in it. And then, you know, on a lot of nutrition programs, they would talk about, well, red meat has a lot of iron and liver has a lot of iron, and which is very true. Those foods do have a lot of iron. So things to consider there, though, are when iron goes into the body, there's two kinds of iron that we can eat. And one kind comes from animals, and we call it heme iron. The kind from animals, let's say you ate meat, it was really many kinds of meat beyond beef have iron in them. That's sort of a misnomer that just beef has iron. But let's say you eat beef or some other meat that has hemoglobin in the muscle, and you eat that. It's called heme iron when it breaks down in your stomach. And the heme iron has a benefit in that it can be absorbed into your bloodstream with no extra work So when people are really, really anemic in the days before iron supplements and things like that, the doctor would literally prescribe a certain amount of liver that they had to eat, because liver is one of the most dense sources of iron in, you know, from animal foods. And so the reason behind that was, number one, they didn't have iron supplements, and number two, the heme iron in the liver actually was easier to absorb in the bloodstream. So one of the things we'll talk about later is, when it comes to trying to take different kinds of iron, there are different types of supplements now if you're not getting it from the foods you're eating, and they make a difference in the way that they absorb. The next thing about food and nutrition is, there are things that don't come from animals that have iron in them. We have patients who do not eat any animal products, and they need iron from their food. The way to think about this is, the very dark green vegetable family has a lot of iron in it. So that's an important thing to remember. And so if you think about kale, spinach, all of those real dark, heavy sort of greens, those are the ones that have the best sources of iron in them. And there's other places you can get iron from non-animal sources. And one of the, you know, one of the internet sort of a two-edged sword where it comes to health information, but for nutrition content, there's a lot of very easy to find websites where you can just look up iron content of food, and it'll give you lists of all the iron you can get. So it's easy to get from food. What we're going to talk about a little bit later is, sometimes it's not so easy to get it in your blood when you eat it from the food. That's a whole other problem. The next thing we want to think about is, okay, let's say we have iron in the body. What in the world does it do? We want to talk a lot about this, actually. There's kind of a few places where iron works. There's the blood itself, the hemoglobin, and that's why when you don't have enough iron, you wind up having anemia. Your cells can't be produced. So we'll talk about anemia and what that means. Most everybody knows about that. But the other things are, the iron beyond the blood is involved in all of your energy processes. Your energy processors are very important, in that inside your cells you have these little areas called mitochondria that are the energy processing system. And if they're working correctly, your cell is working correctly at a normal speed. If they're not working correctly, then what happens is your cell slows down. And when your cells slow down, you slow down. You literally feel fatigued and tired. So I'm going to talk about the role in the mitochondria, which is very, very important. And then there's actual other disease states for iron. So you might have heard of people with too much iron. There's a genetic problem called hemochromatosis, where the person absorbs iron very, very well, but they can't get rid of it. And so those people have the opposite problem of an anemia, where they build up iron in the body. So they have too much iron, and it can be very, very bad for that person and potentially shorten their life if nothing is done about it. So those are the big picture things we want to kind of discuss today. And because iron winds up being kind of at the base of a lot of function for the body, meaning if we don't have the iron in the cell mitochondria for energy, or if we don't have the iron in the blood, etc., none of the other treatments we do are going to work very well, because the cell's not working very well. So you can see it's a really basic need in humans. So to talk about some of the things that we're bringing up there from, you know, big picture sort of function, then we want to work down to what happens if it's you and you have low or high iron. But the blood part, so just to make that a little more specific, in the blood we have this giant protein type molecule called hemoglobin, and it's got four arms on it. And the hemoglobin on each arm has this thing called a heme molecule, which is like a giant, chemical structure looks like a giant jungle gym. And in the very middle of this grid structure is iron. And there's a reason the iron's in the middle there. So the iron is a trap for oxygen. iron attracts oxygen to itself. And so on the hemoglobin, each arm has a heme molecule to keep the iron in place. And then as the hemoglobin in the red blood cells floats around in the bloodstream, it attracts oxygen to it. So when you breathe in through your lungs, the oxygen goes into the hemoglobin. And then when the blood cells get out to your peripheral tissues, they drop off the oxygen so that you can get oxygen into your cells. If you don't do this, of course, you would die. So this is a really, really important thing. The other thing about the hemoglobin structure in iron is without iron in that position in the middle of the heme molecule, the oxygen would not be attracted into your red blood cells and it wouldn't be delivered where it needs to. So it's a very, very critical, critical function. The other thing that appropriate oxygen and hemoglobin and iron balance does is inside the blood cells, there's a balance that goes on between oxygen and carbon dioxide. And so you think of it this way. At the level of your lungs, you have a reverse process where oxygen goes in from the lungs to the blood. Carbon dioxide goes out, and that's what we breathe out. And then when you get down to your tissues, like let's say your muscle cells, which use lots of oxygen, it reverses the process. And so oxygen leaves and goes to the muscle cell, and carbon dioxide goes into the hemoglobin and is carried back. So the other big thing that this does is it helps keep your pH level, because in that transfer of oxygen carbon dioxide, which again is good, we want to get the carbon dioxide away from your cells and put the oxygen in your cells, your pH stays very level. What we see in people who have illnesses where they can't get the oxygen to the cells is the CO2 builds up and they get acidic. They get an acidosis, and that can actually put you in the hospital and kill you if it gets bad enough. So you can see this is a really important function. It's not just, you know, that you need iron inside your blood. It's that this is a core function to you staying alive. And so obviously if this isn't working well, you're not going to feel very good. So that's the blood end of the iron business. The other one that a lot of people forget about but actually affects the way that you feel from head to toe more is the fact that inside of these little things called mitochondria that live inside of your cells, you have iron in a matrix. And so just to remind you of what these little mitochondria do, inside of every single cell you have, there is a group of, they call them organelles, little tiny organs inside the cell. And these are called mitochondria. And their whole job is to do the movement or respiration of the cell. So oxygen goes into them. The oxygen is used to create energy. And then energy is pumped literally out of the mitochondria. So if I don't have oxygen going in, I don't have energy. So that's the first way that iron affects energy, is if it can't deliver oxygen appropriately to your mitochondria, you're not going to feel as good. Your cells slow down, literally. But the other part of it that is crucial to iron, and this is why you need iron not just in your red blood cells, but in all of your body and all of your cells, is inside the mitochondria, the machinery that makes energy using oxygen is operated kind of like an electrical circuit. So the way that it works is the oxygen goes in at the top, and that turns on a chemical process, and it's a chemical process that literally if you stop that chemical process, the person will die. And there's certain poisons that actually work by stopping this chemical process. So it's a very, very core function to life. But the process is the oxygen goes in and does some manipulations with a couple of other ions, elements. And while they're doing that, an electron is released. An electron released is exactly the same thing that happens when you turn the power on to your house and then you plug something in. The electron goes through the wires. It's the electrons bouncing down your wires in your house that run all your electricity. in your body, you do exactly the same thing where you borrow those electrons using the oxygen, and they have to run down something to create the electricity to create energy. The only difference is in the human, when it runs down, it's not a wire because it's inside of a cell organelle, but it works like a wire. So what you have are intermediate molecules that sit. And so inside this little wire-like structure that makes iron, you've got vitamin B2, riboflavin. You've got coenzyme Q10, which is another nutrient you've heard of. But in between them, you've got little iron sulfur molecules. So literally, if your cells get lower and lower and lower on iron, their ability to make energy gets less and less and less and less. So the iron is very important inside of your cells. So one of the things we look at when people come in and they say, you know, I've been getting sicker for the last 10, 20, 30 years, and you know, no one can figure it out, and I'm taking, you know, iron supplements, and my thyroid is being treated, and, you know, everything else seems to be okay. The next thing that we really take a look at is, what are the stores of iron like? So in a little bit, we're going to come back after the break, and we're going to talk about iron stores and how your doctor can figure out whether you have any. So we'll be right back.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
Welcome back to Medicine and Health. I'm Dr. Paul Anderson, coming to you from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, Washington. And our topic today is globally about fatigue and body health, and specifically about how iron works into that. And in our first section, what we talked about was, you know, iron is available in the dietary world from more than just, you know, liver and red meat. We can get it from dark greens and all that sort of thing. And a little bit later, when we talk about sources and treatment and things, we'll talk a little more about that. Then we were talking a little bit about the two major roles of iron. And so the one that most people know about is, if you don't have enough iron, you get anemic. Your red blood cells get weak and light, and they don't carry enough oxygen, and you feel badly. And that is certainly very true. The other is, though, that when we don't have enough iron outside the red blood cells, inside of our cells, we don't make enough energy. And we went through a description of the cell energy machinery, and how when we put oxygen into the cells and they go to this little mitochondria that makes energy, its job is to take that oxygen and literally create electricity with it. So it creates a little electricity, but it has to go somewhere. And the somewhere involves a lot of little iron molecules and a bunch of other nutrients. So when we have low iron, the machinery that creates the energy for the cell literally slows down. You can only put so much power through a weak cell machine. It's similar in your, if you've ever had this happen at home, we talked about the analogy of electrons making electricity in your, you know, in your walls and your wires. If you, or maybe you've seen this happen or seen someone on TV tell you never to do this so you don't burn your house down, but if you've ever taken a little tiny cheap extension cord and plugged it in to your wall outlet, and then attach that cheap extension cord to something that uses a lot of power, something like a space heater or, you know, an electric organ or, you know, something that's got a big motor in it, right? If you've ever done that and left it on very long and then gone and touched your cheap extension cord, you may have found it was very hot. Some people have even started fires by doing this. Well, why is that? It's similar to the idea of not having enough iron inside these mitochondria. You're putting way too much power through a tiny, tiny wire, incapacitated wire, and it literally will sort of frazzle and burn up. Well, in your body, what happens is your body doesn't actually burn up. It gets sick because of that. So you're trying to put these electrons through this weak little mitochondrial system without enough iron in it. It's just like a little tiny extension cord that's going to catch on fire. And what your body does instead of catching on fire, thankfully, is it just stops producing energy. It slows way down. So if you recall from a discussion we had a while back about thyroid, the thyroid runs this system. And so if there's no thyroid, the energy slows down. So one of the things we're going to talk about in just a moment is the fact that the thyroid and the iron work together in this process. So you can imagine, you know, low iron over time might make the body slow down and you would actually feel very poorly. So that's why iron's such a big deal. Now, there's other things to consider. We mentioned before the break about people who overabsorb iron, a disease family called hemochromatosis, where they get too much iron inside. Iron in excess can be dangerous also, because iron, the reason it's so nice to use in these situations is it has two states where electrons can be around it. So it can donate or receive an electron. That's great, but if you have too much iron floating around, it actually will cause oxidation in your body and could damage. So these people who have the high iron in the body with hemochromatosis, we usually have to send them to have blood taken to reduce the iron that's floating around. So they have the opposite problem of an anemic person. Anemic person would love to have a little bit of the iron that these people have. So just like every other nutrient in the body, iron is one of those that has to be in balance. We want not too little, but we don't want too much either. And so that leads to another topic, which is testing. So, and this is, I think this is illustrated really well by a message that I got from somebody who was considering coming to the clinic and was curious. And essentially, the message, this is a 42-year-old woman, and she tells us that she has had progressive fatigue. Her doctor found out that her thyroid was slow, and so he's put her on some thyroid medicine, and that seemed to help for a little while. Now it's not helping anymore as much as it used to. And she said that she had a history of low iron where she had to take some supplements about 5 years ago. And she said her doctor checked her blood now and said her blood count looks normal, so her iron can't be the problem. And she sent a copy of the lab, so this is actually helpful. Because, you know, sometimes when a doctor says something, one of the problems with us doctors is that we have all these things in our head that we don't always relay very well to the patient. And so when we say, well, we checked your iron, that could mean a lot of different things. In the case of this person, in the blood test that they sent over, what we're looking at is the levels of checking the iron sort of go in a couple of places. One is the actual blood count. And that's what the doctor did here. So that's the total number of red cells and platelets and the white blood cell families and hemoglobin and hematocrit and all that. And while the hemoglobin and hematocrit, which are often the key to iron deficiency, are on the low end of normal, they're still just inside the normal range. The total mass of red blood cells is at the low end of normal, but it's just inside the normal range. So it doesn't look dysfunctional. There's two other things, however, that need to be looked at. Because remember we were talking earlier about how heme iron, that kind of iron from animal flesh, absorbs into your blood with no transporters. It absorbs really fast. Well, there's this whole system the body has to hold on to the non-heme iron, the ionic iron that we eat. This would be like, you know, iron that one would find in a supplement or iron that you might find in vegetables or something. And the body has this whole system that holds the iron until it gets delivered where it's supposed to go. And so the next level of testing is to look at that system. Now, with this person's complaints of the thyroid helped, but I'm still fatigued, added to the hemoglobin hematocrit being normal but at the very bottom end, plus the fact that she has this history of being anemic in the past, the next thing that we would normally want to do is look at the other two things that you check commonly. So one is this transport system, and there's a lot of names for it, but a common acronym they use is a TIBC or a UIBC. This is a total iron binding concentration, transferrin levels, all that stuff. It's usually three or four different things. But the bottom line of that test is to see if the body is actually moving iron through the plasma like it's supposed to. It doesn't often do that. The final one, which is very, very, very important, is the marker for the stored iron in the body. And here's the bottom line with that. If you don't have enough stored iron in your cells, all of those things that we were talking about earlier, like the cell slows down, there's not enough electrical transfer to make energy, all those bad things, the lower the stored iron gets, the less your cells can work. And one of the problems is that the iron stores in the cell will often just keep dropping over time, and the blood count, the hemoglobin hematocrit, will look normal. So you don't look anemic, but your cells are anemic, and that's a huge problem. So based on the fact that this person showed me which labs they did have, and it was the blood count, hemoglobin, hematocrit, the next step that we would do with her history of anemia would be the transport tests, the TIBC-type tests, and then a ferritin. Ferritin is the stored iron one. Now, ferritin can be elevated for other reasons than high iron, and you look at that in the history. But basically, in most people, ferritin is a mirror of how much iron you have sitting inside your cells. And ferritin is usually expressed in units that are from low single digits up to, you know, the hundreds. So a normal ferritin that is very useful and healthy in the units that most labs use are really going to be somewhere in the like 50 to 100, 150 range. When you get ferritins that are up in the 3, 4, 500s, that's too high, and we start worrying about the iron overload disease. And some of those patients will have ferritins of 3,000 or something. That's just too much iron. But this story we could take, this patient I was just telling you about where they, you know, they've gotten the history of anemia but they didn't get all the testing done, kind of leads into another story, which is it's the example of how can this really go very, very wrong. And this is a patient who we had for a number of years treating and had been sick for many years prior to that. But let's tell you about the history of how sick the low iron had made this person. So the person's history was essentially fatigue over a period of 30 plus years. They were about 62 years of age. And they had really tried a lot of therapies. They had tried all the, you know, they had tried thyroid, they'd tried this and that and the other thing. And if you looked at the big picture of their history, a lot of their complaints beyond profound fatigue were that their digestive system didn't work. They had no muscle energy. Their, you know, skin was dry and their hair was brittle and they had all these, you know, all these things going on. And so they certainly had thyroid problems and they had other problems. But what was happening over time, one of the biggest things was their digestive system was getting less and less and less efficient. And so in addition to not absorbing normal nutrients, they didn't absorb their iron very well. And when we looked at their labs over the course of the 30 years, you could see this ferritin, this stored iron, going from a low level 30 years ago, which would be enough to kind of keep you going but not feel great, down to almost zero. Okay, they had a ferritin of one or two. I can't remember, but it's about one or two. So the thing that you want to think about with people like this is a long, slow slide, and there was never any repletion of the iron. And to complicate matters, this person had been trying over time, they would try and take iron to get their iron levels to improve. And so when they would try and take iron, they would get very, very ill. Iron made them sick. And so they would take it on and off, and they would eat food that had iron, but the iron stores never improved. And the reason, so our theory in starting was she had tried all the right things. And she'd done B12 shots. She had put on thyroid. She'd had all this stuff. And she still wasn't getting any better. Well, if you go back to what we talked about before the break, which is the iron not only running oxygen movement inside of the body, but also running energy production. If you think about that, she's got 30 years of very low energy production. Remember the story about the weak little extension cord that's going to burn up? That was her cells. So what the body does in those situations is it creates rebound signals that just take all of your energy away. So she felt bad literally because her body knew that she had no way to create energy. So it made her very, very, very tired. And one of the things that we saw then in looking at this, because, you know, you take these 30-year cases in total, you got to look at the dietary things. You got to see, is the GI tract functioning? Hers was not functioning. You've got to look at, you know, the thyroid and other hormones. And you have to look at, you know, all of that stuff together. Her intolerance of the other treatments was a hallmark. And the hallmark is when the body goes into this protective mode because it has literally no iron inside of it, it will make you intolerant of the right dose of thyroid, for instance. Because if you think about it, the thyroid goes and literally turns on these energy-producing mitochondria. Well, if there's no iron in there, it's just like plugging that weak extension cord into too much power. It's going to burn up. Your body's not that stupid. So it makes you not tolerate the thyroid you need. It makes either you get symptoms or it blocks it or something like that. The other thing that happens is, if you think about it, her cells are all slow. And so the groups of cells that turn over the fastest inside the body are going to have the biggest problems. Those cells are in the bone marrow, the ones that make your new blood cells and all that stuff. So they're very slow, immunity goes downhill, etc. But also the digestive tract. So in these people who have 10, 20, 30 years of super low iron, almost universally we see that their digestive tract doesn't work anymore. well, it doesn't work anymore because there's no energy to run it. If you think about your digestive tract, it takes a ton of energy just to take the food you've eaten and get it put into the blood in a form that can be used. Those little cells inside your digestive tract work really, really hard. So they use a lot of mitochondrial energy. So this is why she was in a situation where she would take stuff and it had no effect on her, or it just made her sick. And we're going to go into a break in just a moment, but I don't want to leave with just the bad end of the story. What we'll talk about right after, because it illustrates the role of iron and the role of iron in very severely ill people, is once we were able to effectively treat the iron problem, we started to be able to reverse the other problems that this person was having. So right now we'll go into our next break, and we'll be back in 1 minute, and we'll finish the rest of that story.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
Welcome back to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson, and I'm Dr. Paul Anderson. Today, coming to you from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates, our clinic in Seattle, Washington, our topic today is iron and how, beyond things like anemia, iron can be involved in pretty significant illness. So right before the break, we kind of got up to the point of a very bad-sounding case where a person had been ill for 30 years, and they had progressively less and less and less iron stores over those 30 years, and they developed this horrible situation where all of the treatments they needed were intolerated by their body, meaning they needed digestive support to repair their digestive system, but they couldn't handle it. They'd get sick. They needed iron, but they would get sick when they took it. They needed thyroid hormone, some we talked about a number of times before, and they would make them sick literally when they took it. And so the thing that we were looking at significantly in the beginning of their case was everything appropriate that they needed had been tried, and they were intolerant of it. The one thing that hadn't been looked at is this situation of the low iron in the tissues over all those years making the cells literally slow down. So they were profoundly ill because their cells weren't working very well anymore. And just like on the show when we were talking about thyroid, if you don't have enough thyroid, the cell slows down. That's a little easier fix because you can take thyroid and the cell go back to normal power. The problem she had was if she took thyroid at that point, the cell didn't have the power to run, and so she would just get bad symptoms from it, heart racing, and she would feel very sick. So being that all of the other treatments had been tried and we knew that her digestive tract was very low functional, what we decided to do in her case was to go around her digestive tract with intravenous iron and nutrient therapy. Now, usually for people who have low iron, they don't need intravenous iron, but some people wind up needing it, so it's available. It's a highly specialized type of treatment, and because we do a lot of intravenous therapy, it's part of what we do, and so we were able to offer it. So we had her come in, and in the beginning, we would give her two IV treatments. She was very, very ill. She couldn't even sit up, really. And so the first IV treatment of the week would be iron, and then after that there would be particular B vitamins and other nutrients to support the iron metabolism. And then the second treatment during the week would be more of a general hydrating and nutrient formula that would help the patient, again, kind of back up some of the nutrient deficiencies. She had many nutrient deficiencies beyond iron, obviously. So we did that for twice a week for 2 months. And then we went to just doing it once a week, and we were still giving her iron. And we were testing her periodically, and the iron was, you know, barely moving up. But the good and positive thing was, after about a year, it seems like, wow, that's a long time, but remember, she'd been ill for 30 years, so a year is 1/30th of her illness. After a year, she was not only able to sit up during her therapy, her skin was improving, her digestive system was starting to work a little bit, her mental faculties were clearer, her memory was better. But also she was able to start to tolerate a little bit of the other things she needed, the other B vitamins and the thyroid and all those other things. We were also able to start giving her a supplemental support to help heal the inside of her digestive lining, which had been really beat up from all this. And it was one of the first things she could tolerate to take orally. So it was a really big move forward. So once we got enough iron back into her cells could start to make energy. And then these other things that she desperately needed, like the thyroid and the other nutrients, et cetera, could start to be used, and she could start to absorb them. And she's now a couple of years in, and we basically, after a year, we went to sort of a maintenance IV program. She would come in once a month to kind of keep things level. But her ability to tolerate all the treatment she needed came back, but it did take quite a long time. So that's one of the most profound cases I could explain of how literally quality of life ruining chronic low iron can be for you. And she didn't feel it as much 30 years prior. She didn't feel great. But it, basically every decade, she would go down a large amount in her quality of life and her general health. So those are just some examples of what can happen. Now, the next thing to consider is, what about iron supplements? You know, there's a lot of multivitamins. You look at them and they say no iron or iron free. And so you think, well, why would a multivitamin not have iron in it? A lot of the multivitamins for men will say no iron. Well, this goes back to the idea that statistically, most men, because they don't have menstrual periods and other things, don't get iron deficient as much as women do. Due to menses, due to childbirth, due to other things, women are much more likely to have low iron stores. So you'll see a lot, certainly in most of your prenatal vitamins, there's iron in there. Most women's oriented multis have some iron. Most men ones don't. And so unless the man needs the iron, it's best to leave it out. But what about people who say, well, I've been taking a multivitamin with iron, and my ferritin is still too low. It's still 5. Well, the next thing is that the multivitamin iron dose that you have is designed to keep you level, meaning you're normal when you start, so it's not going to make you go high. So when people get put on a multivitamin with iron, they very rarely have increase in their iron stores to any significant degree because it's keeping you level at the low level. So then your doctor may put you on a high dose iron, you know, like Feosol of ferrous sulfate or ferrous gluconate or something like that. Sometimes that works. If you've ever been on those, you may have noticed digestive upset or constipation or whatever. And so here's the thing to think about with those sort of supports. Those are, remember, there's two kinds. There's the ionic iron and the heme iron from the animals. So the ionic iron is what's in most pills. That stuff has this multi-step process to be absorbed and put in the bloodstream. If the GI tract is not working well, then that type of supplement you'll put all this iron in you and you'll just get constipated and get very little iron in your bloodstream. Some people it works great, some people it doesn't. So if that's your situation, you need to think about different ways of getting iron. The next thing is there's a lot of things that block iron. So if, for instance, there's complexes in grains, whole grains or processed grains, doesn't matter, but there's complexes in grains that will literally block up the iron as well. So many people, even people who can tolerate grains from a dietary point of view, you don't want to be eating grains at the same time you're taking your iron supplement. So that would be any type of grain, basically. The double problem is if you're grain intolerant and you don't know it, people with grain problems can get inflammation in the GI tract, and so they won't absorb the iron because of inflammation. The other thing we mentioned earlier was there, you know, there's dietary sources, and diet's always the best way to get these things if you can. So one way is darker meat, and darker meat is dark because it has something called myoglobin in it. Myoglobin has the most iron. So, you know, liver is at the high end of the spectrum, and then things like pork and beef, and then darker cuts of turkey and chicken, and and then certain fish as well. So when you're thinking about diet, if you eat animal products, those would be the things to look at. If at all possible, I would strongly recommend that you try and source meat products that are at least free range, if not free range and organic. I know that they're more expensive, but you need to remember that meat products do carry a lot of toxic material. So if the animal was toxic, the meat might be a bit more toxic for you. So just something to think about. Whether or not you eat meat, the other places you can get iron from would be from dark green vegetation. And as I mentioned earlier, there's some other minor sources that you can get in dietary things. Dark greens are, you know, a lot of people don't like them. If you grew up at a certain time in North America, for instance, you may have bad memories of spinach. Very distinct memories in the 1960s of spinach being prepared and basically being, you know, heated to death and being real slimy. And it was just the most disgusting stuff in the world that you would ever want to eat. And I think that's why Popeye was always eating spinach. He was trying to get us kids back then to buy into that. So a lot of people got really put off on spinach, and that's understandable if you can remember those days. The spinach doesn't have to be that gross. You can do lots of things with spinach. Spinach can be eaten raw in salads. Spinach can be done up in a stir fry and slightly steamed, so you know it can be done in an appeasing way. Kale. Kale's another good one. A lot of people don't like kale because it's got a lot of fiber in it and it's kind of hard to chew. And if you do put it in a salad, you want to chop it real fine. But kale's another one. You know, you can lightly steam it, put it in a stir fry. You can do these things and it softens it up a bit. You get the food. Both spinach and kale need to be chewed really well to get the maximum iron and other nutrients. These things are full of minerals, so they're very good for you. Most people, if they don't chew them well enough, are going to get less because they have a lot of fiber in them, and so the nutrient like the iron and magnesium, et cetera, aren't going to get inside of you very easily. So another way around it is you can put these things into a smoothie, And so the blades of the chopping machine or the smoothie maker or whatever you're using for that will basically disrupt the fiber in the cell walls. And so when you drink it, it's easier for your digestive system to pull the nutrients out. The other thing is, if you really don't like dark greens and you're just not going to put them in your salad, the thing that you need to keep in mind is you have to get them somehow, right? So the smoothie is a way, and we do this with children a lot, where you can throw a half a handful of, you know, some kale or spinach into it, and then you can put, you know, some berries and an apple and, you know, other things that are going to taste better than raw spinach. And often the kids will just drink it down, and even pay, you know, even adults who hate spinach will drink it. So that's another really good way to do it. If you're going to do it, and let's say you're vegetarian, you're going to need to be eating these dark greens pretty regularly, meaning multiple times a week. If you have a supplemental need, meaning your ferritin is low and you just can't get it to raise, if you're one of the people for whom the regular iron supplements make you very constipated, which is very common, you can get a couple of different kinds. And if you go and you can go to a doctor who does nutritional medicine, they'll point you to these things. Or at your health food store, you'd look for either a heme source iron, which usually means an organic liver powder that is in with some other nutrients to help. That can really work better than the other kind. So something with a animal product powder, like liver powder in it, really very helpful. And then in our really sensitive patients, there's a couple of kinds of liquid iron supports that come from plants. And so in people that just don't tolerate it or who can't eat animal product, the liquid sources are very good. You have to take them regularly, and you have to take them over a period of time, but they can boost the levels of iron quite well. If you go to any health food store, there's two major brands for these liquid iron supports, and they are they're pretty ubiquitous and universal in most health food stores, and you can find them there. Just ask for it. So our topic today, being iron, doesn't sound terribly exciting, but if we think about all of the things that iron does for us, and if we think about the way that iron not only holds onto oxygen in our blood, but also, more importantly really, iron is what runs the electrical current that makes the energy inside every cell we have, then the iron becomes a huge, huge important thing. And if we think about the story that was told about the couple of patients that had the iron problems, low iron over a long period of time can create very severe illness. And in many, many cases, you'll have people who are taking iron every day, but their iron store testing is low. And that is a recipe for that person I was telling you about who had been just sicker and sicker for every year of 30 years. And then pretty soon you stop responding to the other treatments that you need. Your digestive system doesn't work and all of that. So iron is a very, very important element in human health. And the thing you need to recall is if you feel that there's something wrong with your iron, you need to have it tested. And you need to have your blood count tested, but also you need to have ferritin, which is the stored iron, tested. So ferritin, and then the iron binding concentration. Those are the three components of a full iron panel, full iron test. Those are the kind of things that we do at our clinic at Anderson Medical Specialty every day, because we get patients who have these problems every day. And we find that as part of a whole screening process for chronic disease, looking at your iron stores is very, very important. This is Dr. Paul Anderson, Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. Our topic today has been iron and its importance in your health and your body. I will see you all on the radio next week. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You've been listening to Medicine and Health with your host, Dr. Paul Anderson. Visit the clinic website at www.amsa1.com or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.